Whangarei Terenga Parawa, named for the meeting place of the chiefs and the historic waiting place of Reipai. But when you look around Whangarei City, there isn't much that locates us and reflects our identity as tangata whenua.
I don't see that Whangarei visually looks like a Māori city. Other than the people, of course, it's not represented in the built environment. And that's sad to me. It must be sad for our people, and it must be sad for our tangata whenua. It's, how do they see themselves in the actual city?
That was Bernadette Aparahama, no Ngāti Kahu ki Whangaroa, Rawako Te Aroa. Bernadette is a planner living and working in Whangarei.
I think there is quite a lot to change in terms of how we enable Māori to be represented in this whole district from an actual governance representation at our political landscape within our local government, all the way through staff or within government agencies. Seeing more Māori faces in here and building the capacity of staff to work with Māori all the way through to having in a proactive space a value system and having, I guess, our tangata whenua represented in the entire spectrum. We're really lacking in that. I don't see Māori in the built environment if that's where the focus is. And I don't think our hokainga would see themselves in the built environment. And I don't think our hokainga would see themselves having much influence at this stage through the entire development of what the city looks like.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Nau mai haere mai ki te Indigenous Urbanism. Aotearoa Edition, Episode 3. I'm your host, Jay Kake, and this is Indigenous Urbanism. Stories about the spaces we inhabit and the community drivers and practitioners who are shaping those environments and decolonizing through design. On this episode of Indigenous Urbanism, we visit Whangarei, Northland's largest city, to examine the role of carvers, visual artists and planners in creatively reinterpreting our cultural narratives and reinscribing our identity as tangata whenua into the urban fabric. To learn more about the potential for expression of tangata whenua identity through public art, we sat down to have a kōrero with Tohunga Whakairo Te Warihi Hetaraka.
Ko Te Warihi Hetaraka tōku nei ingoa no Whangaruru au. Aho kā i tupu ake au kei Whangaruru, i whānau i ahu kei Whangarei Hōhipera. My name is Te Warihi. I'm from Whangaruru, but born in Whangarei. So yeah, te huri o hekeke, yeah, so raised out in Whangaruru. Yeah, grew up there and then left home when I was 16 to go to Rotorua to learn whakairo. And I was chosen then, and that's where the connection to all of tribes is important, because when I was sent away, I was sent to represent all of the tribes or the hapū of Taitokera. It's the re-establishing of our carved meeting houses and our marae complexes that will help us regain our identity as Māori, I feel. In fact, I know it will. And it was partly the reason why I was sent away, was to bring that back to Northland.
We met with Te Warihi at the site of the proposed Hihioa Cultural Centre, located on the Hihioa Peninsula in central Whangarei. The project is slated to be a significant statement of tangata whenua identity in the city, and once complete, the precinct will include a performance stage, conference centre and theatre, and an exhibition hall. Currently, there's an existing boat shed on site, which houses an office and a carving workshop.
The idea of developing the cultural centre came from our rangatira and our elders, Whangarei, back in the day. So first started around about 1980, but they didn't really started to talk about it until 93, when they were developing the town basin. But the original people that raised it were Charlie Kake.
Oh, yeah. I never knew this. Of course, because he was one of those ones that just drove so much in the community, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was them. Jimmy Poe, Violet Poe, Hane Kingi, Sissy Pittman. There's over 40 or so kaumātua from around Whangarei. So those are just a few of the names of the elders that, that's both Charlie and Ben, of course, were involved at the beginning. I think it was mostly because they saw that our younger generation weren't sort of involving themselves in their culture, their tikanga. But also at that period too, kapahaka and all of that sort of stuff started to spring up. All the tikanga stuff started to drop off. So they saw the cultural centre, in their minds, the cultural centre was a place where people could re-establish their identity as Māori. And in 1993 when the council asked for Māori input to the town development of the town basin. And it was there that the elders, our chiefs of that time, identified Hihiawa, this part here, Hihiawa Peninsula, as a site for the cultural centre. I think the first job was to secure a building, the building here, because it was closest to this site. At that time, there was an old boat shed here, and the people had just moved out, so we approached council, and we've got a lease on it, a 30-year lease on it. So that's enough time to put something in place.
Work on the cultural centre is due to commence this year, with stage one focusing on the renovation of the existing building to include a workshop, learning and viewing spaces, and a specialist laboratory for marine and environmental research. A new waka shelter with launching gantry and a covered walkway will also be constructed. The physical component of this project really began with the opening of the waka and wave sculpture and the heritage trail and art walk connecting the peninsula to the town basin. Tamato a Pohe and Kutuitui Whitinga bridges followed, opening up the popular Hatea Loop walkway. These smaller public art projects are significant as currently they're the only visible manifestations of tangata whenua identity in the Whangarei urban environment.
There are things out there that are starting to happen. And that in regards to retrieval of identity too, I've had approaches from several groups last week asking for assistance in developing their knowledge base in regards to who they are, what their identity is. So the next stage for me, to answer your question straight up, is to start identifying to identify amongst our youth those who will lead us, who will take over from the stage that we're working on now.
I asked Te Warahi about the stone walker and wave sculpture located on the Hatea Loop, a project produced in collaboration with Chris Booth. I thought this project was unusual, given that it is constructed of kohatu, of stone, not timber, like the majority of Te Warahi's work.
The material is irrelevant. Yeah. It's irrelevant. Creativity is the thing. So if you've got those things floating around in your mind, then your eyes land on an object that doesn't matter what the object is.
This led me to ask Te Warahi about his creative process and his work as a carver.
Yeah, as you age, then you're really looking at how the next generation is going to take it forward into the future. Mm-hmm. And so that creativity stuff now is not as relevant as it was when I was a youth, mm-hmm. when I was younger. Teaching that the next generation, because most of our work is around, meeting houses, canoes, and, well, heaps of po all over the place. Mm-hmm. But most of the work we do mainly is already there. I don't see myself as an artist for a start. I think my role is more to do with recording our history, using the methods that our ancestors used and handed down from generation to generation. So the patterns that were handed down is the same to me as the letters in the alphabet that you learnt at school. So all of the designs that they've handed down already had philosophies and meanings and all of those sorts of things connected to them, embedded in them, yeah. And it's passing that stuff on that's I think, really important to me. Mm. And also passing on the takutaku that go with them, the verses that go with them. The takutaku, like the new term for takutaku is karakia. So takutaku is basically the framework that that was handed down from generation to generation so that there's no changes made to to what you're recording. Eh? What I was going to say directly to answer that question was that, sometimes I have dreams and they just come out of nowhere. So for example, we just do a poll like that, for example, and then go and say, oh, what the heck that thing's going to represent. Is it going to be tupuna? Is it going to be representative of tupuna? Then something happens, bang, the blooming vision comes, oh, keep away from tupuna. That's going to be something else, yeah. Mm. And then you start, forming the structure of it. But all of it mainly comes through guidance from the spiritual realm. And what you put on it, like the whakare and everything that goes on it, the whakare, it's the stuff that's handed down. So we got the spiritual connection and the stuff that was handed down added to what was. Yeah. Mm. The handed down stuff is the whakare and all that sort of stuff. The name of the different patterns. Yeah.
As a highly respected and eminent tohunga whakairo and cultural practitioner, I asked Te Warahi to share his perspective on shaping our environment from a Māori worldview.
Our tikanga is just as important as the reo. In fact, I think it's even a little bit, in my view, tikanga is a little bit higher.
They go hand in hand.
They go in hand, yeah. They go hand in hand, certainly. And it's not good enough that you gain the reo on its own. Like learning the reo outside the context of tikanga doesn't necessarily give you those values that our people actually live by, and those values that apply to ensuring that our environment is taken care of, that kōrero, you know, hutia te rito te harake kei hea koe, koro mako e kō. We make iau hea te mauna te ao, he tangata, he tangata, he tangata. So they're saying several things, that tauparawa, they're saying several things. One of it starts with the environment, but the environment will cease to exist if the mentality of humanity isn't in balance with it. Yeah, interesting, because the buildings we put up now too, you know, there's materials in there that does harm. It doesn't break down. It does harm to the environment. Whereas when you looked at the buildings that our ancestors built, nothing was harmful. And it's got to be a re-education. The re-education of the younger generations that's coming. It's got to be a younger generation that we need to feed this information into.
That was Tohunga Whakairo Te Warahi He Taraka, Master Carver for Te Tai Tukiro. Ngā mihi nui ki a koe e Te Warahi. Reflecting on Te Warahi's kōrero, it really changes everything when we reframe development in that way and start thinking in terms of a reciprocal relationship between people and our environment. With this shift in thinking, well, we might just start to reconsider the impact that we're having and start to make really different decisions as a result. And maybe at the heart of it, that's what our cultural perspective brings to shaping the environment that's different. I think this is something that we as Māori have to offer the built environment professions and Aotearoa as a whole. Next, we spoke with David Badham, no Ngāti Whātua ki Ōrākei, a planner based in Whangarei. We asked David to share his whakaaro on the convergence of the planning profession and tikanga Māori.
Ko David Badham, tōku ingoa, ko Ngāti Whātua te iwi, ko Ōrākei, ko Rāua Kaipara te hapu. I'm a Whangarei boy, I'm a Whangarei lad, I was born and bred here. I'm back here in Whangarei with my family. I would say it is a tension. Planning has never really got the Māori worldview and the cultural component of sustainable management. Everyone sees the term cultural or Māori worldview and they get scared. As a planner, I think it's a strength for me to have that ability to whakapapa back to Ngāti Whātua. not just from a working perspective, but also just in terms of having a better understanding of where Māori are coming from, because the Resource Management Act really is founded on a Western worldview of science and fact, and you have an expert who comes and tells you that something's okay. Whereas Māori worldview, through different links and connections, the concepts of Māori and whakapapa is much more holistic, and you don't just look at something in isolation, you don't just look at one project here or something like that, one individual component, you look at the entire system and how it interrelates. So I think planning as a profession really struggles with that, because it's not something that you can quantify, it's not something that you can get an expert or a scientist to sit up on a stand in the environment court and say that this is a quantifiable cultural effect of something. It's intangible, it's emotive, and I'm really interested in that intersection of the different worldviews, because I don't think you can just ignore one or the other. They both have foundations, but I do feel that planning really undervalues the Māori worldview and cultural values. Planning, at least, the training is very much focused on that Western worldview. The comfort that you can rely on other expert opinions to form your own opinion, you're taught that quite early. Like, that's, you know, you go, if you need to figure out what an ecological effect is, you go to an ecologist. The engineer will tell you the engineering design. And then the planner is sort of this role which takes all of these disciplines into account and then makes a determination or makes a decision. But with what is the difficulty, the challenge is you've got these Western science approaches which, you know, they're quantifiable, they're measurable, they're peer-reviewed. There's scientists with PhDs with 40 years experience, but then what the planning profession I think really struggles to do is to compare that sort of structured approach, Western approach, to the Māori approach, where you might have Kaumātua Kuia who have 40 years experience in understanding whakapapa connections to place and Māori, but are they on a level field when you compare that to the PhD engineer, and they're saying that the ecological effects of a development are all okay, but then the Māori worldview is saying, well, actually, the intersection between the two and the relationship between ecology and Māori and environmental effects is totally holistic, and they all relate. So whereas a Western worldview might say, well, the effects on something here are minor, the effects here are minor, the effects here are minor, the Māori worldview might look at all those minor effects and say, it's significant. The concept of indigenous urbanism needs to be taken out and more readily accepted by the councils, because, and not just in local government, in the central government as well, there's again, it's that Western approach to development, which looks at things in isolation, whereas I think there's a lot to be gained from the Māori worldview applying to urban development, looking at things holistically, and bringing in those Māori design principles as well.
In regional cities like Whangarei, these projects wouldn't be possible without the support of local government. There's still a lot of work to be done, but there are some significant movements afoot in the spirit of genuine treaty partnership. On that note, I'll leave the final word to Bernadette.
With a council hat on, or being in a council space, I'm feeling like I'm seeing willingness within the staff, definitely. I've only been working in the space for 5 months, with most of my work being tamaki-based, but I think nationally, I feel like there is more genuine willingness to do better in the planning profession.
You can find out more about the Hihioa Cultural Centre project at hihioa.org.nz. That's hihiaua.org.nz. Indigenous Urbanism is a production of Te Matapihi. Sandy Wakefield does our sound recording, editing and mixing. Our theme was composed by Thomas Burton. I'm Jade Kake, your host and executive producer. For more information about today's show and other episodes of Indigenous Urbanism, go to indigenousurbanism.net. You can drop us a line at info@indigenousurbanism.net. And if you like what you're hearing, please give us a review or rating on iTunes. Coming up next on Indigenous Urbanism, we speak with Karen Wilson, a Ngāti Awa artist, designer and craftsperson, with studios in Tiatai Tukiro and Tamaki Makaurau. Karen's urban and built works include the origination and development of public and private projects with a cultural focus, frequently in collaboration with artists, designers and architects.
If we go back to the head, the hands and the heart again, that cycle of integration, well, it's an endless cycle. If my heart's not in it, then I'd probably better walk away from the project, you know? If I can't handle it in my head, then I'm probably better not continue because I'm intellectually not capable of taking it any further. Those two, working in a kind of synchronicity, are what drives what comes out of my hands, do you know? So I firmly believe that it's an integrating and integrated process that when we hit it, it's like, I'm no longer the agent of what's going on here. There's something else at work.